My dearest friends, I bid you all a warm welcome to today's sermon. Though we have spent many hours looking over the recent events of the galaxy, ranging from the inception of the Imperium of Man all the way up to the present day 41st millennium, we must remember that old Father Time has marched on endlessly for eons before this. In an ancient age, long before the earliest ancestors of man even stood upon two legs, we will reach the time of the Eldari mythology. This was where the gods and goddesses of the enigmatic Eldari ruled through their plane of the cosmos, and supposedly, it is from their actions which brought life itself into the universe. Though we will never know if there is any truth to these claims, to listen to the following tales, we must hear them from the frame of mind of the Eldari themselves. These forlorn children of the stars truly believe, with every aspect of their bright and immense souls, that their mythological tales are in fact true recollections of ancient, long-forgotten events. Some of you may scoff at the mystical and fabled stories of gods, and yet none can doubt the existence of the surviving members of the Eldari pantheon. As it stands today, in the wake of the fall of their species, where Slaanesh was birthed into existence, devouring many of the Eldari deities, there are only a select few of their gods left with their lives. The Laughing God is rumored to have sought refuge within the forgotten depths of the Webway, where they dance and frolic with the legendary troops of the Harlequins. Isha has been captured by the putrescent plague father Nurgle, and from her rusted cage she whispers out the secrets to cure his many virulent diseases to the mortal species of the galaxy. The fiery god of war, Cain, has been fractured and split into many distinct avatars which reside upon the drifting craft worlds, simply waiting to be reactivated as a bloody golem of death. But we must now understand that in the ancient days of their species, that there were far more than these three gods in existence. And so today we shall be exploring the entirety of the Eldari mythos. We will start by learning of how their species was first formed, through to the gifts of the gods, which gave their burgeoning race a home amidst the darkness of the void. After this, we will learn of the most famous and lamentable tale from their mythological tapestry, and it would be of the tragedy of Eldanesh. It is most rare for the Eldari to ever share these stories with any outside of their own species, and typically the retelling of the tragedy is only performed by the grand troops of the Harlequins on the most sacred of occasions. But, regardless of this, our scholars, scribes, and academics have managed to decipher and transcribe what they could from our scant records of the Eldari tales, and we now have our own interpretation having been translated into Imperial Gothic. But without further ado, my friends, let us look back long before the time of man and learn of the fabled mythos of the Eldari. In the bygone days of the Eldari Empire, they once worshipped a great and mighty pantheon of their gods, with their mythological tales claiming that each and every one of their species had been created from their divine inception. As the legends say, it was from Isha, the goddess of fertility and harvest, and from Kurnus, the god of the hunt, who first came together to mold the Eldari species into reality. The first of this newly formed mortal race was named as Eldanesh, and he awoke from the void only once the god Asurion breathed life into his corporeal form. But this was not a gift to be limited to only this antecedent figure, for his breath was to flow down through each of his descendants, bringing life to all within their species for the rest of time. Though life itself is a most precious and unequivocal gift, we must acknowledge that a life lived in lonesome solitude may be more akin to a curse than anything else. Asuryan, though gracious in his action, was content to simply create life, and he did not wish to further foster its growth. Because of this, Eldanesh was born upon a forlorn, barren world, a wasteland devoid of meaning, within the endless void of space from where no fellow kin could be found. The abandoned Eldari had nothing but the eternal and bleak expanse of the cosmos to look out into, and thus did they feel the first pangs of despondent emptiness within their young souls. Upon seeing the pain of her divine children, Aisha was racked with an innate sense of misery, and it is said that no god nor goddess had ever felt such a degree of despair within their immortal souls. Thus, a part of her spirit did twist and contort at the thought of her creations being born into an agonizing life, and so she shed but a single tear into the material world. Where this drop landed, all of life burst forth in a glorious display of ecological beauty. The ground itself split into vast, lush forests, with a thick ground cover of vegetation and flora sprouting out as a verdant wave. Huge oceans manifested themselves from the single tear, containing a veritable bounty of sea life darting and arcing their way through the sparkling waters. The sky itself sprang forth, coupled with the rising sun, which was now dotted with all manner of flying creatures, filling their air with their harmonious song. Eldanesh, looking out across this new glorious landscape, saw the creations of the galaxy emerge from nothing, and yet they were to act as a veritable garden for him and his kind, and from this he felt his divine mother's eternal love. Seeing the potential in this figure, it was not only Aisha who chose to bless Eldanesh, as the entire pantheon now wished to leave their mark on this young king. His father, Kurnus, provided him with an innate ache of desire, in the hopes that it would one day drive the Eldari to greater and more inspiring heights of glory. Asuryan, who had breathed life into their species, instilled wisdom and introspection so that they may understand themselves and truly know their own souls. The laughing god Segorak taught Eldanesh of irony in the hopes that it would regulate their own egos so that they would not grow too haughty or arrogant with their newfound life. Morai Heg, the mistress of fate, imbued within them the gift of insight, allowing the Eldari to know of their place within the cosmos. Liliath, goddess of dreams, provided the simple gift of joy for its own innate pleasures. Hoek, the silent wanderer, provided an adventurous spirit, hoping that the Eldari would venture out to seek new opportunities for glory, rather than stay as a stagnant entity. Vol, god of industry and smithing, gave the Eldari an inventive spirit, hoping that they would be able to manipulate the natural world to produce artifacts of untold majesty. The goddess Gia looked down upon Eldanesh and saw that he was both owed nothing and that he deserved nothing, and so did she provide nothing. She hoped that he would understand that the Eldari would not always be able to rely upon the gods for assistance, and that one day they would need to forge out their own destinies within the stars. Finally, the war god Cain, Lord of Murder, looked down to Eldanesh, and with his mind twisted with the thoughts of a thousand battles, he imbued the young king with the ability to endlessly feel anger and rage. Whilst this may seem to be more of a curse, there was some love carried with it. He hoped to instill within the Eldari with a spirit of martial conquest and to fuel their species in such a way that they would be able to defend the heavenly kingdom which he knew they would soon build for themselves. It is rather interesting that in these days there was no split between our own plane of reality and with the hellish immaterium of the warp. Because of this, the gods themselves walked among the Eldari, guiding and teaching them during their fledgling days of life. Though the companionship of the gods is a great gift indeed, Eldanesh was never intended to live alone as but a single man. He was blessed with a brother, named as Ulthanesh, along with an entire species of fellow Eldari to live amongst. It is important to mention that the life which had burst forth from Aisha's tear had filled the galaxy with all manner of creatures, and yet their creation was done so in a way which did not innately favor the young Eldari. There were many alien species which would pose a distinct and ever-present threat to the kin of Eldanesh, and so it soon became clear that a decisive action would need to be taken. To safeguard his people, Eldanesh asserted himself as something of a mortal liege to the rest of his brothers and sisters, and he led his warriors on a mighty warpath across the stars, forming the foundations of what would soon become the Eldari Empire. Though he was greatly successful in quelling the various dangers of the cosmos, he soon found himself locked in a stalemate against an alien race known as the Hresh Selain. In this standstill, he was forced to form an alliance with his brother Ulthanesh, who brought his own noble house of Eldari forces to finally seize victory from these stellar horrors. Whilst it seemed that this brotherhood, forged in the flames of war, would prove to be an unending and mighty partnership, if only the two brothers had known of the strife that would soon befall them. Perhaps if they had remembered their gifts of foresight and irony, then they would have sought to humble their own egos. But alas, this was not to be their fate. It was during a later conflict with the nightmarish alien species known as the Autochthini that the two Eldari brothers found themselves at odds with a truly insurmountable foe. Their combined armies, whilst strong enough to have forged their celestial empire, was simply not great enough to curtail this terrible enemy, and so they sought out a divine solution to overcome this problem. They beseeched none other than Cain, the god of war, to aid them in their battle, and striding forth from his palace, he did indeed pledge himself to the mortal species. Whilst they were quick to attain victory, thanks to the support of their war god, the newly forged alliance would soon lead both Eldanesh and Ulthanesh down a bloody path of conflict. And though they did not yet know it, strife and pain would soon become second nature to the two brothers. Over the following years, their relationship, previously founded upon their desires to unite and overcome adversity, was now defined by a cruel sense of jealousy over the other's position. Ulthanesh, with his lofty ambitions, could not help but look upon Eldanesh and his elevated position within their society without feeling the sting of desire. Eventually, and inevitably, these emotions manifested themselves into a terrible conflict. Eldanesh saw the fraternal threat of his once-honored brother as being simply too great, and given that it had the potential to shake the very foundations of their empire, he was forced to take a drastic action. As such, he banished Ulthanesh into an eternal desert, where he would be forced to live out the rest of his mortal days, and he would never again be able to threaten the rule of his kingly brother. Deep within this desert, Ulthanesh found no peace amidst the sands. He meditated for eons on what he perceived to be a terrible betrayal by his brother. His mind became fixated upon the innate evils and wrongs of the universe, as well as of the abhorrent dishonor which had now marred his appearance in the eyes of his species. This hatred, however, was not the only emotion which he felt. Deep within his soul, he felt the spark of his mother's love, and from this he was imbued with a desire to seek out peace. With his new goal in mind, he set about to free himself from this infernal realm and to reunite himself with his people once more. Unfortunately for the Eldari brothers, however, their prior entanglement with Cain had meant that his constant fiery gaze was always to be set upon them, and he was less than pleased with the idea of these two making any form of peace. The god of war believed that there was no greater battle to be found than of that of fraternal conflict, and so this was not a duel which he would be denied of. Thus, Cain took up a blade and cut off a single finger from his own hand. He then shaped this divine digit into a deadly scorpion, which would be set upon Ulthanesh to hunt him through the eternal desert. He knew that the followers of this banished brother would then blame Eldanesh for his death, and that it would trigger a war of unimaginable proportions across the vast expanse of the galaxy. Despite Cain's unmatched power, Ulthanesh was able to evade death during his long journey, but he did not emerge from the desert unscathed. During a battle with this divine scorpion, he was brought so close to the dark abyss that his scattered mind formed a most awful revelation. He saw his own ambitions as having been misplaced, and that he now believed that he could forge his own destiny of greatness without the support of his brother Eldanesh. Rising from the brink of death with his newfound desire for glory, Ulthanesh returned to Eldari space, and much to the pleasure of Cain, he had committed himself to reform his own great house, to bring about a new age of conflict and division amidst his species. Eldanesh, upon seeing his brother's return, felt this as a betrayal of such proportions that the galaxy had thus far never before witnessed, and any doubts that he had of the threat of Ulthanesh were now banished to the cosmic winds. He was reinvigorated in his duty to act as the self-appointed protector of the Eldari people, and he would not rest until his brother had been brought to justice for his crimes. In his mind, he believed that if Ulthanesh had found repentance for his actions, that he would have understood that he needed to remain within the desert for all eternity. But alas, it seemed that fate did not intend for this outcome to transpire. By this point, Cain had grown drunk with the powers of both Eldanesh and Ulthanesh's conquests through the stars, to the point where he had grown as perhaps the strongest member of the Eldari pantheon. But unfortunately for all, as the god of war, he would not sit idle with this new wellspring of power. The goddess of dreams, Lilith, had become racked with nocturnal visions of the death of Cain, performed at the hands of the mortal Eldari species. She saw them tearing his body into a thousand pieces, with blood oozing from his limbs, and rather sadly, she was not content to keep this premonition to herself. Eldari mythology tells us that in the ancient past, that prior to the deific bond which was formed between Isha and Curnus, that the goddess Liliath was in fact at one point the consort to the god of the hunt. This only came to an end when she was spurned from his side, as the god decided that he preferred the company of the younger goddess of fertility. Lilith never found forgiveness for either of her fellow figures of divinity, and so she saw this as an opportunity to finally seek revenge against her former lover. As such, she informed Cain of her vision, and due to her prophetic nature, the god of war believed this to be a threat which he could not ignore. Thus, two gods plotted to slaughter the young Eldari race, with Cain seeing it as a means to survival, and Lilith only using it as a means to cause a great pain in the heart of Isha. It did not take long for Cain's rampage to begin. Taking up his great sword, he descended in a vicious onslaught against the mortal beings, reaping a bloody harvest upon the many worlds of the Eldari. Such was the level of violence brought against the innocent progeny of the gods that Isha turned to Asurion to beg him to intervene and stop this horrible madness. Seeing the terrible potential of the gods being able to meddle with the affairs of these mortal beings, Asurion took a decisive action to prevent it from ever occurring again. He formed an impenetrable barrier between the worlds of the Eldari and of their gods, forever blocking off the mortal realms from the interferences of the gods. Though her children were safe from Cain's bloody wrath, Aisha's tears would not cease, as she could no longer guide nor love her children from afar. Thus, in the dead silence of one fated celestial night, both Isha and Cernus approached the gentle god of the forge, Vaal, and after much deliberation they persuaded him to produce an artifact which would allow them to communicate with the mortal Eldari. Through a combined effort, the trio designed and formulated the relics known as Spirit Stones, and through these, the Eldar would be able to still maintain a lifeline to the gods. These waystones would provide Aisha with the chance to continue in her teaching and guidance of her children. However, as time went on, her secrecy over this forbidden method soon turned into arrogance. She believed that she could remain untouched from her actions and that none would ever discover what she and her fellow gods had produced. But alas, in one careless moment, Cain saw her communicating with the outcast mortals, and in a state of rage, he brought this discovery to none other than Asurion. With a heavy heart, the Phoenix King was forced to acknowledge his disappointment in her betrayal, and so he declared that if both Isha and Cernus thought they were beyond him, then he would no longer protect them as his kin. Thus, he outcast the two gods to be ruled over from this point on by the war god Cain, and decreed that he was free to do with them however he desired. Cain bound both the healer and the hunter in a set of scorching irons set at the bottom of a burning pit of fire from where they could never interact nor look upon their mortal children ever again. He brought every cruel method of torture he knew to bear against the two gods, and such was his level of torment that it soon became to be a point of contention amidst the rest of their pantheon. Some of the more caring of Eldari gods already believed that Cain was going too far with his treatment of their divine siblings, and so they were prepared to support the entrapped duo, but only if a conflict was sparked by someone far braver than they. Vaal, the kind god of the forge, was perhaps the most pained out of any at seeing this fate. He felt in some ways responsible for what had occurred, and so he petitioned Cain to free them, offering him anything in return for the cessation of their torment. After much deliberation, the two came to an agreement. Vaal would forge 100 swords, each being more impressive than the last, and in return for this divine arsenal, Cain would indeed free the two gods. Rather capriciously, however, he was only provided with but a single year to produce these armaments, and so Vaal was forced to work tirelessly through the cosmic nights to fulfill his end of the bargain. tirelessly, he endured on with an indefatigable fervor, being forced to break open the very stars themselves to fuel his mighty celestial forge. After the year had passed, rather sadly, Vol could only offer up but 99 swords to Cain, and so, in an act of desperate trickery, he concealed a mortal blade amongst his own, before delivering the stockpile to the god of war. Delighted at the quality which had been produced, Cain stayed true to his word and immediately released the two imprisoned gods. Seeing their opportunity, Aisha, Curnus, and Vol fled from this realm, choosing to vanish into parts unknown, far from the reaches of the God of Destruction. They did not wish to stay to see if he would ever discover the deceitful action which the great Forge Master was forced to take, and so their own exile seemed to be the most suitable solution for them. This proved to be a most wise thought. As once Cain covered the mortal sword, he bellowed a mighty cry across the galaxy, branding Vol as a disloyal, treacherous liar, and in his demand for vengeance, he sparked the war in heaven. He sought to turn upon all who would doubt his might, and to purge the great pantheon of the gods from any who had ever worked against his divine wishes. Upon learning of this declaration, Asurion beseeched the goddess of fates, Morai Heg, to foretell of their destiny. However, when she looked through the shrouded veil of time, she saw nothing but death, blood, and fire. Though she was unwilling to commit herself to this conflict, she did have a stinging curiosity to discover the course of this war, and so she took a daring act to decipher the fates. In secret, she stole a thimble of Cain's blazing blood, and within her ghostly lair, she set it aflame atop a set of her esoteric scales. The goddess could find nothing to balance the weight of the divine blood, other than the destined thread of the mortal, who was known as Eldanesh. Thus, when she returned to Asurion, she informed him that the outcome of this war had already been foretold, and it would be by the will of Eldanesh to decide whether or not the gods would live or die. With their fates now held in a mysterious limbo, the various gods of the pantheon were forced to choose their sides. Some decided to throw their strength in with the mortals, believing that Eldanesh did indeed hold the power to end their eternal lives. Others, however, chose to stay with their divine kin, and they sided with Cain, pledging to slaughter the young mortal king wherever he was to be found. It is said that only Asurion himself remained neutral in this war, although he was destined to be racked with the largest degree of shame and guilt for his inaction. He felt that from his quick judgment over Aisha, that he had brought this entire conflict into being, and from this he would never find forgiveness. Though both Aisha and Curnus had long since departed from this realm, Vol, on hearing of all that had occurred, chose to return to fight for Eldanesh and for all of the mortal Eldari. Within his cosmic forge, he finally completed the fated 100th blade for Cain, which outshone all others as his true and final masterpiece, and it was named as Anaris, the Light of Dawn. Wielding this heavenly blade, Vol charged into combat with Cain, throwing caution to the stellar winds by challenging the god of war to single combat. The cosmos itself was racked by the thunderous clashes of this duel, and with each strike of their swords, it was as if 1,000 suns had collided with one another. Even though Anaris had been forged specifically for this duel, Vol was but the god of smithing, and he was of no match for the bloody god of war. With a mighty reality-splitting blow, Cain struck down Vol, and cast him out from heaven, shackling his broken body to his own anvil, which would forever plummet through the void for the rest of time. But with the death of the craftsman, it seemed that Cain was now unmatched within the pantheon. And so he let loose a roar of victory across the galaxy, and the war in heaven seemed to have come to its final end. But it was in this moment of glory where the complex strands of fate began to twist and intertwine themselves. The mythical falcon, named as Falchu, consort of Curnus and close companion to Vol, was dismayed by this fatal turn of events. As such, the divine avian retrieved the blade of Anaris and delivered it straight into the hands of none other than Eldanesh. With the light of dawn now in his possession, Eldanesh did not hesitate to challenge the god of war to one final duel, in which the fates of the pantheon would be decided once and for all. Cain, with his twisted mind, saw this as a great betrayal. Even though he already viewed Eldanesh as his enemy, he did not expect him to readily stand against him in such a way. He remembered the battles in which they had fought against the Autochthini, and of all the other conflicts which defined the early Eldari history. And thus, with his blood now boiling with rage, he turned to fell the foolish mortal. Eldanesh himself was fueled by the grace of his gods, and he was filled with the vengeful knowledge that Cain had imprisoned and tortured both of the parents of his entire species. With his soul now bursting with the hatred instilled within him all those eons ago by Cain himself, he fell upon the god of war with a savage intent. Though he stood as the greatest of mortal champions amidst the Eldari, and though he possessed every boon of the mythical pantheon, we must remember that Eldanesh was but a mortal, and Cain was the empowered god of war. Tragically, the young Eldari king was torn apart, with his body being utterly destroyed, leaving naught but a crushed and bloody smear on the ground where he had once stood. Witnessing the death of their chosen champion, Falchu fell from on high and collected the lifeless remains of Eldanesh before ascending high into the skies, where his body was laid to rest as the red moon. Here, it would stand as a dark and bloody reminder of the dire consequences which would invariably occur if the gods were to ever again declare war upon the mortal species of the Eldari. But simply performing these funeral rites were not sufficient for the great falcon. Falchu, left in a state of discordant sadness, gifted a single golden feather from their own wing to the descendants of Eldanesh, in the hopes that it would grant them with the gift of swiftness that could not be provided to the young king. With the war in heaven having reached its deathly end, Cain now stood as the ultimate victor, having bested mortals and gods alike. Amongst the pantheon of the Eldari, there were now none who could stand against him, and he had reached a level of power which none thought could ever be possible. But despite this, we must remember that Asurion was still present as the head of the gods, and in an act of vengeance, fueled by his utter disgust at witnessing the events of the war in heaven, he cursed the god of war for the rest of time. Cain's hand from that day on would eternally drip with the blood of Eldanesh, so that all would know of his murderous and treacherous actions taken against the Eldari people. None would ever again see him as a faithful or level-headed deity, and instead, he would simply be viewed as a violent, maddened lord of war who could never be trusted for anything beyond conflict. From this act, he was to forever be branded as Cala Mensha Cain, which in Gothic would translate to Cain, the bloody-handed god. Asurion at this point, having done all that he could to seek vengeance for Eldanesh, declared that the war in heaven was now over, and that peace should be enforced throughout the ranks of the mortals and gods alike. Cain, content with his victory, returned to his realm, now standing satisfied at having bested all who ever thought they could contend with the bloody god of war. As I stated at the beginning of this sermon, in the 41st millennium, only three of the Eldari pantheon still exist within the cosmos, and so we must ask of what happened to the remaining gods. This is a rather sad tale, defined by decadence, overindulgence, and hedonism, and it is from the actions of the mortal Eldari which ultimately spelt the end of their divine figures. Because of this, perhaps Liliath was correct in her fabled dream of witnessing the death of Cain due to the actions of the mortals. However, as we will soon discuss, this climactic scenario did not play out quite as she envisioned. Many eons after the tragedy of Eldanesh, the Eldari Empire had reached its zenith amidst the stars. The Webway had been integrated within their society to such a degree that almost every individual could reside within a secluded palace, living out their days in a state of pure, opulent bliss, where every pleasure of the galaxy was at their fingertips. None would work, none would toil, and none would worry. Instead, they would simply discover new methods for pleasing themselves. However, these days of bucolic ease were soon destined to take a turn most dark. As their species became desensitized to their current pleasures, they were forced to search for more depraved and more hedonistic activities until their entire society became defined by their despicable attitudes towards life. But the actions which they chose to commit were not confined to impact only the material world. As we all know, any psychically sensitive species will have an impact on the immaterial hellscape of the warp, and so the increasingly reprehensible actions of the Eldari soon began to cause many ripples within that infernal dimension of suffering. These emotional energies, whilst initially small, were able to rapidly grow thanks to the moral collapse of the entire Eldari society, until they began to coalesce into a single swirling vortex of darkness. It was at this point that the entire galaxy would now be forced to bear witness to the terrible consequences brought about by this ancient species. The depraved powers within the warp had grown to such a scale that they attained sentience, and such was their might that this figure could rise as a fourth chaos god, named as Slaanesh. With their birth cry, reality itself was shattered. The great warp rift of the Eye of Terror was ripped into existence, as thousands of Eldari worlds were plunged into the Immaterium to be feasted upon by the newborn god. The Prince of Pleasure devoured the souls of trillions of bloated and succulent Eldari, consuming any stray fools who thought themselves as being safe to enjoy a life of decadent depravity. But it was not just the mortals who were destined to suffer. As Slaanesh came into existence, they rapaciously devoured the bewildered members of the Eldari pantheon. In the first moments of their existence, Liliath, Asurion, and Morai-Heg were scooped up and drained of their immortal lives, and their eternal essence was simply used to further empower the new god of excess. Cain, retaining his strength from the days of the war in heaven, took up his great arms to do battle with Slaanesh, but even he was found to be lacking when faced off against a lord of the ruinous powers. The god of war was defeated, and in his death throes, Slaanesh shattered Cain into 1,000 broken fragments to be cast out into the void. Some of these were recovered, and they now stand as the fabled avatars upon the Eldari craft worlds. But as a singular entity, Cain was now dead. With his defeat in such a decisive manner, it truly does seem that Liliath was correct in her premonition, but she herself could not be saved from the grasping claws of Slaanesh, as she too had been devoured by the dark god. Tsegorach, the laughing god, fled into the dark depths of the Webway, where he has remained to this very day, dancing and taunting the demons of the warp who would readily consume his divine soul if they could ever catch the evasive jester. Aisha, the goddess of fertility, was stolen away from her place of isolation by Slaanesh as a prized trophy, and rather sadly, her consort Curnus was not able to rescue her, as the god of the hunt was set upon and devoured by the Dark Prince. Though she remained as a prisoner to Slaanesh, after a long battle within the chaos of the warp, Nurgle has since abducted her to live out her eternal life within his putrescent garden of pestilence. He tests out each of his new diseases on her divine flesh, watching how they progress and rack her form, content with the knowledge that she may never die, and that she will simply remain here as his deific guinea pig for all of time. Though not all hope is lost, from where she exists within the warp, she may whisper down the cures of these noxious diseases to the mortal species of the galaxy, and so perhaps it is thanks to her grace that Nurgle has not been able to strike down all with his horrendous plagues. Thus ends our story on the mythology of the Eldari gods. Though I believe this to be the true retelling of their legendary events, there are several different interpretations and versions of this tale. Some have stated that the war in heaven was in fact sparked by Cain slaying Eldanesh, after the mortal king refused an offer to rule over the galaxy in the war god's name. From this, it is said that Ulthanesh, enraged at seeing his brother die at the hands of the gods, united the twin houses of the Eldari and led the war against Cain to seek vengeance for the crimes which had transpired. With that being said, however, we trust in the words of our Harlequin informants, and so we are confident in saying that the war in heaven played out as it was described, and that it ended with the death of Eldanesh. As it stands today, Eldanesh is still an honored figure to be remembered and treasured by the Eldari people. During times of desperation, those aboard the craft worlds will enact a ceremony known as the Ritual of the Young King. Here, an Eldari exarch lost on the path of the warrior will be sacrificed within the flames of the inner sanctum of Cain's shrine, and this will be performed in order to awaken an avatar of Cain for war. Perhaps this is performed to remind the shattered peace of the war god of his duel with Eldanesh, but alas, we may never know the truth. We are still uncertain as to the actual events which occur during this ritual, but rest assured that if we ever discover these secrets, that I will be quick to inform you as to their revelation. As a final note, I am sure some of you will be wondering where Inead, the god of the dead, fits into this ancient mythos. In truth, this deathly figure was never a member of the original pantheon, but it was prophesied that in an event as large as the fall, that the departed souls of the Eldari would be able to coalesce and form a new god who could wage a heaven-splitting war within the stars. As it stands today, a burgeoning cult of Eldari followers has spread out across the galaxy, where they seek to empower and bring about the true birth of this god, in the hopes that they will be able to slay Slaanesh and finally bring about a new golden age to their ancient empire. In any case, my dearest friends, this now brings us to our end. I must give thanks to each and every one of you for choosing to listen to this mythological tale of the Eldari. And I hope you all have a pleasant day. Goodbye.